Now it's time for our weekly chat with Labor MP Andrew Little.
This week, with Health and GCSB Minister Andrew Little, I asked him about the decision to retire the spy domes at Waihopai and his recent comments saying the current home isolation system isn't set up for the current number of COVID-19 cases, as well as his criticisms against the Ministry of Health for not releasing individual data to the Whānau Ora Commissioning Agency. I began by asking if he still has confidence in the Director General of Health after these two incidences.
Oh, absolutely, yes. Organising the isolation, the home isolation process has been, that's been in place for a few weeks, but it's under pressure because the number of people who are getting infected and being confirmed each day is way bigger than people had planned for at this particular point. So it's just a process of making sure the system runs in as streamlined a way as possible, given the volumes that we've got. We'll iron those things out, and I have full confidence in the team to do that. And likewise, with the disclosure of data to the Whānau Ora Commissioning Agency, it is unfortunate that the Commissioning Agency had to go to court to get their issues aired and get the Ministry to reconsider its view. Anyway, it has done, and there's been a process in place also involving Te Ara Whiti, as it turns out, to try and work out exactly what it is that is needed, and therefore getting the disclosure underway. And I'm advised that information is now being disclosed that meets Whānau Ora Commissioning Agency's needs.
So why can't the home isolation system can handle more than 120 cases per day?
Well, it will be able to, but it was the fact that one of the important organisations that gets notified of a positive test is the Public Health Unit, the Auckland Regional Public Health Unit that's up there. As well as having to do the follow-up for each positive test to check that the person is okay and suited to isolating at home as opposed to going into an MIQ facility. They've also got to do the broader contact tracing as well. Where have you been? What places? What other people have you mixed with and all that sort of thing? So they're trying to jam all those things together with volumes that had not been predicted as we were putting these things together. So it's about making sure that that there are changes to the process that means that we can get through the volume of work and the volume of calls that needed to be taken and the content of those calls. That process is underway, and I'll get that fixed reasonably smartly.
But how long will these changes take? Because as you said yesterday to News Hub, the time it takes for public health officials to contact those who are positive will take up to 2 days or even longer, and that's not acceptable, is it?
Yeah, and I think in terms of evaluating somebody who's confirmed as having COVID and about whom an assessment needs to be made as to their suitability to isolate at home or go to an MIQ facility, that's got to be done within that first 24 hours. That is the commitment that is made when this process was being set up. So we've got to make sure that happens, and for a large part, I think it'll be prioritising, you know, what work has to happen first, what questions have to be asked first, and to some extent too, making sure that where people are identified as having said it is suitable for them to stay at home, arranging others, and often it'll be other healthcare providers, to swing in and provide care packs and make sure that the pulse oximeters are delivered and some education is given about how to use them and what have you. So it's just about allocating the work in a way that means it gets done as quickly as possible and people get attended to as quickly as possible.
But do you think the work of care is being adequate enough, considering that three people have already died while isolating at home?
I mean, we need to investigate and understand the full circumstances of each of those who have died at home. I mean, we know one of them had actually been in hospital and elected to discharge themselves, that there had been contact following their discharge, and there was then a very rapid deterioration and they unfortunately died. The other two cases, we just need to know what those circumstances are. But in any event, I mean, it is pretty obvious that if you if you've returned a positive test, you have COVID, then the system needs to swing in pretty smartly to make sure that you are getting the support and care that you need. If you have other health conditions, that needs, you know, we need to know that. If you're in a household with a large number of people, we need to know very quickly, are you able to isolate away from those people safely, or do we need to find another place for you? So all those things need to be established very quickly, because otherwise, you know, the risk of infection of others is, becomes much greater. Or if you do have a bunch of other health conditions, or you are just rapidly getting unwell and we don't pick that up, then you are going to be, you're going to be at risk, and we need to make sure people aren't in that position.
Okay, but earlier you told us that back in October that ICU could handle a surge, well, and hospitals could handle a surge. And back then, when we talked about this topic, there were only around, I think, 500 or so active cases. But now there are almost 3,000 active cases. And if home isolation couldn't, the current home isolation system couldn't cope with 120 cases plus per day, how much could hospitals handle?
Well, it's interesting you raise that point. I think we should keep the issues about isolating at home and being careful in the community is separate from hospital and ICU capacity. So you're right, we have nearly 3,000 active cases. We have, as of 1 o'clock yesterday, I think about 70, just over 70 people in hospital, of which 5 were being cared for in ICU or HDU units. So the hospital system is coping with the demand, even with this rapid increase in the number of cases. The issue is, if you know, people do elect to, because it's suitable for them to do so, stay at home, to isolate at home, we still need to make sure that the care is in place and the monitoring is in place and that that system is working. It's that system that we've, you know, been in the process of standing up over the last 4 or 5 weeks that has been, you know, put under real pressure, and we've just got to make sure that there aren't delays between the time that we get a notification of a person testing positive and their first call and that assessment about where it's most suitable for them to be isolating. That's the bit that we've got to get right. That's the bit that's been under pressure in the last few days. And now the team is working on getting that right.
Government recently approved the use of 2 COVID drugs. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so we now have a number of drugs, Ronapreve, baricitinib, and have now been approved for use. These are for when you do have COVID. They alleviate symptoms. They're very effective and have been proven very effective overseas. There's other drugs too. There's tocilizumab has been used. That's a drug that was previously widely used for arthritis. It's now widely used for COVID-19. And we have molnupiravir, which is an oral medication that has been approved, and we're getting 60,000 courses of those. All these drugs, because of their effectiveness in treating the symptoms of COVID, mean actually that people, you know, do recover more quickly. If their symptoms are so serious they're in hospital, they actually shorten their stay in hospital and become much less likely to have to, you know, have the more intensive levels of care. So they're very effective. We need to have a range of therapeutic treatments available, and we're building up our stock of treatments to do that.
Some people might think now, oh, there's a drug available, and why do we need the vaccine, though, maybe?
Well, I mean, what the vaccine does is that if you do get infected, you are much, much less likely to get very seriously unwell. If you are unvaccinated and you get the virus, then you have a much higher chance of becoming very unwell, struggling to breathe, and being in that state for, you know, for several days, and perhaps even needing hospitalisation, as we're seeing with, you know, cases at the moment. So the vaccination is vital for making sure that if you do get COVID, you are much less seriously harmed by it. If you're not vaccinated, you are much more likely to be harmed quite seriously by the virus.
How soon can we see the drugs rolled out within the system?
Fairly soon. I mean, we've got advanced purchase agreements on most of the drugs. Pharmac has made the procurement decision. MedSafe has to give their approval, but these are drugs that are in use in other countries, and so there's plenty of data available for MedSafe to have a look at. My expectation is it'll be a matter of weeks before those drugs are here and widely available within hospitals, and you know, it'll become part of our program of treating COVID.
Okay. Moving away from COVID for just a couple of minutes, and now let's talk about GCSB's decision to retire Waihopai. And, well, the statements coming from Andrew Hampton said the domes at Waihopai are obsolete. Why is that?
I think it is just the domes that are being retired, by the way, not the whole facility. The facility does a number of other things than just picks up what the dishes and the domes do. The reality is the amount of intelligence that they are collecting is very, very small now. I think Andrew Hampton assisted at roughly 0.5% of the intelligence that the GCSB gathers comes from the dishes and domes at Waihopai. So, and technology is changing all the time. The GCSB is shifting the various platforms that it's on and that it uses to gather intelligence, and that's just become a very, very small and almost trivial part of their intelligence collection. So in those circumstances, it makes sense to retire them.
What kind of job does these domes do? What sort of communications do they intercept?
Satellite communications. That's what they're kind of scanning the skies for. So they pick up those forms of communications. But the reality is, in terms of communications of interest, less and less is available through that sort of platform, and more is gathered through other platforms. And so therefore the GCSB shifts their technology and their activities to the areas where there's more fertile ground for intelligence gathering.
So the other GCSB listening post in Blenheim will still be operational?
They have a facility there for data and intelligence processing, so that will continue there, yes.
That was Labor MP Andrew Little. The Wire.